Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we have Dylan Nussbaum on the show. Dylan is an NWT pro. He's currently sitting in second place in the Angler of the Year race after the regular season events. That's all four regular season events have been fished. He's in second place as they head into the championship over on Lake Huron. And he just got second place on Lake Sakakawea. I can't say enough how big of a fan I am of Dylan's. He's just, he's a young guy that's out there putting in the work. And he is just, yeah, he's just a super, super fishy dude. I can't have him on the podcast nearly enough. So this is only our second time having him on. And yeah, great interview here. We get a great update on just the whole season in general. And then we get right into this awesome tournament that he just had on Sakakawea. So we get all the details. Let's get into it with Dylan Nussbaum. North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities, and as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up, take a look at everything, drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these Clean, Drain, Dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that so many, the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. What is the update on the season so far? Get us up to speed. If you can think back even to Erie and walk us through the season, how things have been going.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's been a great season, and I got to start off with saying thank you for having me on here today. But it's been an awesome season. We started off on Lake Erie, and conditions were kind of all over the place, tough bite, and Lake Erie has always been a tough one for me, but I was able to come out of there with a seventh place finish and couldn't be any happier with that event. Going to the Mississippi River, also had a great event there, finished in the teens for that one. That was really the event I was super excited for. I love the Mississippi River. I just can't get enough of it there, but also had a great finish there. And then moving on to Green Bay, that was an event that was like no other. One of the toughest bites I've ever seen. Some of the longest runs we've ever made, over 90 miles one way. And it was rough. And I actually took a 0 day one, but made a massive comeback on day two and was able to get away with a 19th place finish there. So I got a check at that event also. But overall, that event was crazy tough, and I was just super happy to walk away just with a check at that one. And then was Sakakawea, and probably one of my favorite places to fish. I love fishing out in the Dakotas, and walked away with a second place at that one, and I'm sure we're going to be getting into all of the details with that one, but overall, it's been a great season.
You know, when you know, being from out east, you know, over where you're at, and I love getting your story last time, having you on, just really getting to know you, you know, cutting your teeth on some of the reservoirs out there. But I'm curious, you know, for somebody like you living over there, and it's true with anybody that travels to fish, I'm just always curious, you know, everybody's perspective on that. When you say, like, you like the Mississippi River, well, that's not your home body of water. So I'm just curious, like, What's your history on the Mississippi River and why you like that so much? I just love to hear the stories about that.
I just love the Mississippi River because I love river fishing in general. I just think the current is one of the coolest things and how it sets up walleyes. I just can't get enough of it. And, you know, even at the Red Wing event, we were in Pool 4. So I was actually down in Lake Pepin, which isn't so much like a river. But what I really do like in the rivers is actually getting up where all the current is and being able to pattern them fish, just kind of read the water and almost put the electronics away for a little bit, which isn't so much what I did at that last event, but it's still just such a fun place. I love anywhere that there's moving water.
I just find that interesting. You know, guys that travel to fish, it's not always in everybody's comfort zone. You know, talking about that Green Bay event, I had a couple podcasts with some guys after that too. That just sounded like such a brutal deal. But what an interesting thing with, it's not easy. You know, and I kind of getting into this too, where you're sitting in a pretty fantastic position for Angler of the Year. That's not easy to do when you take a zero at all on any day, you know, on the tour. I mean, that's almost like it was just an unreal circumstance, man. Like the caliber of dudes like yourself that were taking zeros really spoke to how tough that tournament was. You know, you talk about making the long runs and stuff like that, but you had a little bit of a comeback day too. What was the secret for that day two comeback?
You know, for that event, I did have a lot of confidence that I was going to catch some fish if I could make it up there, and I made it. But it was one of the toughest runs I ever made. It was the hardest I ever pushed a boat, and believe me, I did not like making that run. For beating up on my gear, I don't like doing that, but I knew that was the only thing I had. So I made the run, got up there, and I could see the fish. There wasn't many. There was not many at all with what I was doing, but I could see them, and I could see they were 8 to 10 to 12 pound walleyes down there, and I just had them so close to biting to where they would just nip the tail and they wouldn't take, and there just wasn't enough of them, and I wasn't getting enough of them at counters on day one. And I had a backup spot that was also in Big Bay, but it was 10 miles away. And, you know, we're pushing it for fuel on that. I mean, but I made the run up to where spot number two was, where I was catching plenty of fish. And I got there and it was crystal clear, which in pre-fish, it was muddy and there was tons of fish there. And I got there and I'm like, oh no, we're not going to catch anything. I threw down control motor, started looking a little ways. I'm like, this ain't going to work. I'm like, we got to risk it and go back. And we hit a couple spots on our way back to the area where we first started and just got back there. Had about 30 minutes left and just never ended up getting that bite. Came back in with nothing. So when day two rolled around, I basically said, I am just going to my number one spot. I'm staying there. I'm going to mark whatever fish I see and just keep making small circles on them. And that's what I did. I mean, I just went down through anytime I'd see a weed patch with a couple walleyes around it, I'd put a mark on. If they wouldn't go, I'd just keep making a real big loop and come back to it about a half hour to 45 minutes later and just kept doing circles like that for the day. And it just ended up working out. And I got a 4-pounder to bite fairly early in the morning, and I seen it coming up and I'm like, oh man, I'm like, this is like so exciting because I need this fish, but at the same time I'm like, this is probably the smallest fish I've seen here the whole time. And I brought it up, and as it came up to the top of the water, it fell off, and I'm like, we just lost that fish for a reason. I'm telling you that right now. Didn't even get worked up about it. And after that, we caught an 8, a 9, and then a 7-pounder after that. And I'm like, that is perfect. And I mean, just really buckling down on a spot was the secret. I mean, that was it. And I couldn't be any more thankful for it, because it was nice cruising in a little bit early on day two.
Do you take anything big away from that, like learning wise as a tournament angler, or are you just happy to cash that check and put it in the rearview mirror and try to never have that experience again? Like, how does that go for you?
You know, every event, you have to take at least one thing that you can learn from every single event. There is plenty to learn from every event. It doesn't matter if you've won the event or finished in last place. You better be taking something, if not four or five different things away from that event. You have to pick up on maybe what the other, what second and third place were doing or different areas. I mean, every time you got to kind of really think about it and see kind of, okay, this spot kind of fizzled out. And, you know, even at like the Sakakawea event, there was a bite going on out on like rock piles and stuff like that. But just from past events, not even on that body of water, but just on any body of water, is I just feel like I kind of know the odds of, are these fish going to stay here long enough now? And that is just from trying to take away anything from any event. And it's stuff like that is where experience really pays off.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, and that Sakakawea tournament, I mean, I'm not scared to get into that right away. I mean, second place, phenomenal. You're quite a few miles away from, you know, home, so you had to make a big old drive out there. And you know, just chatting with you and, like, you know, referencing our, you know, getting to know you, and the last time I had you on, you know, reservoirs fishing is, you know, just the big picture of it all. Like, you know, you fish reservoirs, you grew up fishing some reservoirs around where you're from. Going into that Sakakawea tournament, maybe we just start there. Like, you know, how was it for you? Like, what were some of your things you were thinking about when you were making the drive out west here?
Yeah, absolutely. So going into that event, I was really paying close attention to some of the tournaments that were out there. A lot of them were kind of where they had boundaries. So say they were only up allowed from like Newtown down to the Van Hook area. Another event they had was from like Douglas to the Beacon. And then they also had an AIM there where Eric McCoy took first place, and they were basically allowed anywhere for that one. So I was really paying close attention to all of them tournaments to kind of even break down the lake in sections just by itself right there, right off the get-go. But the second thing I was looking for was just areas that I was comfortable fishing. And even like on the Kinzu Reservoir here back home, it's a long lake, similar. It's like a mini Sakakawea, basically. And when I say mini, like way, 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 way smaller than Sakakawea. But the one thing about Kinzu is at the top end, it gets shallow. You get structure, man-made structure. It's a flooded reservoir town there. So basically, that's where we always go to catch our walleyes, up to the shallower side all throughout the year. And then there are bigger fish down south where the wall, like the banks get very steep. It's 200 feet deep down that way. But the fishing's tough. Big fish, but tough. So going into it, like the Van Hook area really caught my eye right off the get-go because it's a lot shallower, which it does have deep water also. It's got weeds, it's got man-made structure, bays, everything in it. So that's the first place that really caught my eye, and that's really where I wanted to go off the start. And getting there, basically the first day I went out there kind of confirmed that, yeah, this is probably where I'm going to stay and start really breaking it down. And, you know, that is very risky for a tournament to just kind of stay in one area like that when that area is 60 miles away from the boat ramp, because out there, I mean, it can get so bad that you can't make that run. It's going to be impossible to make that run. But I just stayed with the weather the whole time, really kind of just watched the wind to make sure I could make it, to make sure I didn't have to switch gears, which I did look down by the ramp and just got some backup spots, but I didn't spend really any amount of time down there. It was mainly focusing on the Van Hook area.
And what's your like pre-fishing style? I'm just curious about that. Maybe we talked about it last time, but I just want to ask you like your pre-fishing style to this point. I know you're a forward sonar guy. Your style is kind of like you're a power fisherman if you can be. I'm just curious when you go into, you know, pre-fishing, how much time do you just spend looking around? How much time do you spend trying to catch fish and sort of, you know, verify those kind of things? You know, how many different types of patterns are you looking for? Like your style of pre-fish when you go into a tournament like that, when you talk about, you know, what you found in Van Hook, you were pretty comfortable day one of pre-fish. Like, okay, I'm going to break this down. This can be where I spend my tournament as long as I can get here. Like, what does that actually mean? Like, you know, as far as like your process of pre-fish.
So when I first get to an area, I mean, really, I'm doing all the prep of looking on the graph that time of year where I think the fish might possibly be and kind of what the most safe bite is going to be. And then from there, I'm basically going and looking for a clue right off the start, just any clue I can possibly find. Whether that is in 10 foot of water in the weeds, 20 foot of water on a roadbed, 30 foot of water with some trees or brush in it, or fish suspended out in the open water. And in one day, especially on the first day, I'm really going to be kind of looking everywhere. Like I'm leaving nothing unchecked on day one when I'm looking for that first bite or that first clue. I'll start out with whatever I think is the best possible bite that time of year. Say that time of year, say, I mean, weeds that are 10 to 15 feet deep, I'm probably going to go check them because I just love weeds. I'm going to go check them out first. And then on my way through, I might say, hey, there's a 20 foot roadbed. I'm going to go check that. Roll over there, check that. And, you know, I just keep just really bouncing all over the place without a plan, really. But at the same time, with the plan, just looking for a clue.
North Dakota is truly home to some world-class fishing opportunities. And as anglers, it is our responsibility to help protect these world-class opportunities by following the aquatic nuisance species protocols here in the state of North Dakota. I'm talking about the Clean, Drain, Dry initiatives. It goes like this. At the end of the day of fishing, or whenever you decide to put your boat or pontoon or whatever you got on the water that day back on the trailer, it is your responsibility to head to the back and pull the plug, make sure the water's draining out of the live well, and walk around, make sure you don't got a bunch of weeds hanging off the trailer. Just clean it all up. Take a look at everything. And drain the water out of everything before you hop in the vehicle and drive home. Don't assume that the person in the passenger seat did it for you. It is everybody's responsibility. There's no excuses and no exceptions. If you're unsure what these clean, drain, dry protocols are, I'll put a link in the description of this podcast that'll take you to the North Dakota Game and Fish website, and it'll help give you all that information. Again, as anglers, it is our responsibility to know and understand these things and to execute them. And the reality is that so many, the vast majority of the fisheries here in North Dakota are unaffected still by aquatic nuisance species, which means, anglers, we've been doing a great job of cleaning and draining and drying our boats, and it is working. So let's continue to do a great job here in 2024's open water season. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations, and to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. And when it comes down to presentation, I mean, what's your process on that? I mean, how many fish do you got to catch in pre-fish to start feeling good about something? Or, you know, I mean, are you just try to stay versatile and ready every single day? I mean, what's your kind of approach with that during like pre-fish?
Yeah, so during the pre-fish, I mean, really, I go with the most basic but best bait possible to get a bite. And you know, that is a Z-Man Senna Jerk Shads and a Moon Eye Jig. It is a bait that I have confidence in that I can catch fish any time of year. It's just like a safe bait for me. And that's what I'm going to start out just kind of throwing in all of them different areas. And if I'm going to start getting a couple bites on it, or at least get reactions on it to see if fish follow, to really see if they are walleyes, then I might start switching up my presentation to maybe a jig and a crawler, maybe a jig and a chub. I mean, whatever it is, whatever you have to do to get them bites going, or even if they're more reactive, go to something like a jig and wrap. It's just a really good baseline to start at with that bait. And then you have to either pick it up or slow it way down, go to live bait, something like that.
So what were the bites like then? I mean, what ended up being the deal?
So anymore with forward facing sonar, I catch a decent enough sample out of an area. Say if it's, I don't even know, maybe an area that's a couple hundred yards long or something like that, we'll say. If I'm going down that weed line and a couple hundred yards, I catch three fish that are 27, 28 inches, then I'm like, all right, this is perfect. Yeah. I'm just going to mark this spot and I'm not even going to come back to it. And I only really started doing that the end of last year. I don't even go back and check any of these spots until tournament day because it doesn't make much sense to me anymore to have, not that I think people are really following, but even just locals, they see it like a wrap boat going in, fishing this little area. They're like, ooh, what's over there? And then they go over there and fish it. And then they do catch some, and then they're just there for a long time hitting that spot. So that's part of it there. And the other part of it is I just don't want myself to go in there and beat them up. I have a tough time pulling away from fish because it's just so much fun to catch them. So I just stay away from the spots and then just keep finding more to build. So I have something to come to tournament day and just go boom, 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 boom. And I can hit all these spots in anywhere from 10 minutes to 20 minutes. And you can just cover so many spots. And then from there, you can just really kind of dial it in tournament day. It's risky doing that, but at the same time, it's like it's been working very well.
I mean, I know you were paying attention to the tournament weights that, leading up to your tournament out there. So you obviously had some type of an idea, hopefully maybe like an expectation of like what you were looking for. You know, looking back on that, I mean, was that, were you validated like immediately as far as like what kind of weight you were looking for? I guess I'm just curious what you were expecting, what you were hoping for a weight and, and just how that all played itself out.
Yeah, I was thinking going into this event, even before I got there, I was really thinking we were going to need 30 pounds a day, if not more, just because there's just so much new stuff coming out. I feel like new techniques and just there's a lot of really good guys on tour. And I was thinking it was going to be somewhere from 30 to 32 pounds a day, which would have been very possible if we were allowed to call in that event. And that's kind of something I didn't really take into consideration and I should have. But I mean, right off the bat, day one, the first day I went pre-fishing, I caught a 26, 27, 25. And I'm like, all right, this might work. So really from there, I just started building on that. And one thing I did notice throughout the pre-fish was that I was catching a lot of skinny walleyes, like 28 inches that were 6 pounds. So it was almost one of them things where I had to also think about trying to find a different bite at the same time. And that's during the whole week, I'm like, I have to go find a different bite. I have to go find a different bite. And I'm glad I just kept building on what I had because even though I finished second, there was definitely enough fish there that it could have been a first place. And I can't complain with what I did. And there was definitely the right caliber of fish there. They just kind of came in the wrong order a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely been a big topic of conversation this year with some of the rule changes on the NWT. How does that really go for you? Like on tournament day, when it's a one-man limit, 5 fish, no call, but this isn't the first time, right? Because, Green Bay was 3 fish, no call. But that was a tough bite, so a lot of people were going to be just happy to catch 3 fish.
Absolutely.
And the Mississippi River, and I find that stuff just interesting. Like for you, in hindsight, you know, or maybe we should start like this, like getting into day one of the tournament. I mean, you know, whatever you're willing to share, whatever pattern you were on, was all your fishing after pre-fish, was all your fishing, all your A spots, like your whole like first choice plan on one pattern? Or were you finding fish, were you finding tourney grade fish on multiple patterns, you know, for your playbook? Like, walk me through day one.
So I only had basically one pattern I committed myself to, but I had it throughout the whole lake, really. So I did have backup spots if this didn't work out. It was a bite I was very concerned about. The water level was dropping. Reservoirs, typically when the water's dropping, fish are going to be pulling out of the shallow water. I was fishing a lot of weed edges, anywhere from 10 to 5 foot of water. And that can be a little bit nerve-wracking because, like I said, that water was pulling out, and it's just an unstable bite a lot of times. But for some reason, I just kind of had it in my mind that these fish were going to stay there. And really, on day one, I went down through my A, B, C, D, and when I think it was when I got to my E spot, I finally found some fish. You know, starting out, I was catching some fish here and there. I caught two fish that were just over 4 pounds, ended up throwing them back, and we did catch one 5-pounder. It was the only walleye seen on the whole weed edge, and it was a 5-pounder. I'm like, it's right on the edge of my cutoff. I'm like, we're going to throw it in just because we already hit four spots and we didn't catch really anything of caliber. So I threw the 5-pounder in on that spot, and we went to our fifth spot, and I started rolling back in there, and I'm like, all right, there's one. I pitched to it, and it was like a 5.8. I'm like, all right, that'll work. Go down through, see another one, and pitch to it. It's like a 6.2. I'm like, sweet, we got something going on. And go up a little more, see another one, pitch to it. It's like a 5.8. And go up a little bit farther, and it's like another 5.8. And I mean, it just happened like right in a row, easy as can be, and just done. Just threw them all in the box, very happy with day one. We had almost 29 pounds on day one, which I was very happy, or almost 28 pounds, I'm sorry. But we had a dead fish in there also. We could not keep that thing alive coming back, so we lost half a pound there. So going into day two, that really kind of made my mind up of what I want to do. I'm going to go back into that spot that I ended on. I only seen four walleyes there, so I was a little bit nervous, but for some reason I was like so excited to go back. And when I rolled in there, I was like, man, I should start on this side and go that way. I'm like, that doesn't make much sense. I'm like, I'm just going to start on this side and go this way. So I started on that side, started going down through, and I'm seeing a lot of smaller fish. And I am throwing to some of them just to make sure they're walleyes. Like, they weren't even big enough really to throw to, but they were 20-inch walleyes. And I'm like, this is weird. I'm like, I haven't caught a fish that small. And real quick, backing up to the pre-fish, I only caught two fish in this area, but it was a 28 and a 29-incher. That was the only two fish I caught in the pre-fish, so I wasn't even really thinking of this spot as a number spot. So getting back to where I was catching a couple 20-inchers. I caught a 4-pounder, like a 3.8, some of them, threw them all back. And for some reason, I caught a 4.3, and for some reason, I'm like, man, I just have like this gut feeling we need to keep this fish. And my mind's like, no, throw it back. But my gut's like, you have to keep this fish. And I don't know why. I don't know if it was just the wind, the time limit. We had windy conditions that were supposed to be in the forecast, and I ended up boxing it. I threw it in there, went down along there another 10 minutes or so, and I catch a 5-even. And I'm like, oh, no. I sat there for a little while, and I ended up boxing that one also. So as I continue down this little stretch, I catch a 6-3. I'm like, there we go. We're making up some ground now. Go up a little bit farther. And as I'm moving along, I seen like three more fish that I kind of pitched to. They didn't really like it, but they were big. Move up a little bit farther. I catch another 6-pounder. I'm like, perfect. We're going to make up some ground. I'm like, all we need is like a 7-pounder now. And we roll up around the bend, and I pitch to a fish, and I kind of lose it, and it was a giant. And look over. I couldn't find that fish again. Look over. Pitch to another one, and she kind of didn't even want anything to do with it. And I swing back over, and this is all in within like 5 minutes. I swing back over. I see two sitting side by side, and I pitch to it, and ended up being a, I think it was a 5-5. And I'm like, we can't keep this fish. I'm like, we got to throw it back. So we ended up throwing that fish back. And I go up just a hair more, turnover, very next cast, pitch out, and we catch like a 6-2. I'm like, well, that's our day right there. I'm like, I can't throw that thing back. And we ended up boxing that one. And you know, as I went up to pull the trolling motor, I'm looking up and I'm like, holy man, there's just another giant sitting there. I'm like, do you think we can just like still fish for a little bit for fun? And, you know, it's just one of them ones where it's just tough calls. And it's just sometimes I can come back and haunt you, but you got to do whatever your gut tells you. And that's just what my gut was telling me. I mean, it could have went completely different if I didn't throw that in there. I mean, I may have gotten nervous and left. You just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, dude, I find that stuff, you know, the decision making, I mean, it's the mental gymnastics is just not, that's just not for everybody, man. And it's that's the part that is just wild, you know, to me as a spectator. And it's really, you know, without the opportunity to, you know, have these conversations and interview you, it's like, that's kind of the part that, you know, you don't really see a whole lot of on social media, you know, the posts and whatever. It's like, I love hearing those stories and just kind of hearing about that stuff, because it's not easy, and it's a big element to it. It affects the outcome for so many people. And, you know, getting lucky with the fish in the right order, you know, that kind of takes that decision making out. And that's the luck that all you anglers are kind of looking for. But, you know, for you, getting into that day two and making those early decisions and feeling like you have to box a 4-3, like, at what point in time are you even thinking about like angler of the year type stuff? I mean, that has to be on your mind a little bit. I mean, you know, again, like, you came out of this turn, you're sitting in second place right now and it's close. Like, was that ever on your mind, or are you just out there fishing every day?
Honestly, I mean, it's on all of our minds for sure. But honestly, I've been just fishing the events. Like, I just have been going for it every event, like not trying to play it safe even in the slightest bit. And, you know, it is going to come back around at some point, but it's just one of these years that I just want first place so bad. And when I feel like when you set your goal at first place and you come up just short of it, that's okay too. I mean, you're getting a check, you're paying the bills, and ultimately, I mean, it's going to lead to angler of the year. But I know I've heard John Hoyer say it before, just, you got to fish the event and not even think about angler of the year, just go for first place and it's going to fall into place. So even this next event, going to the championship, I'm going to be going for it. I've never fished up that far, but, you know, I'm still going to be getting risky with it for sure, because you're going to have to bring it.
And, you know, what presentation? I mean, we're talking about it. You're talking about your process in pre-fish. I mean, was that like a giant key to your success getting these bites? Was it a little bit tough? Were they kind of specific on what they wanted to eat? Or, you know, what did you land on for your roster of presentations and gear selection for the tournament?
So really all it came down to was a Santa Jerk Shads and a VMC Moon Eye Jig. I mean, anywhere a 3.5 to a 5-inch Santa Jerk Shads is something I always have in my box for kind of a couple different reasons. Fall time, bigger baits, springtime, a lot of times smaller baits, but I like having them throughout the whole year because a lot of the times if you're even getting short bit on even like a 5-inch center jerk shads, drop down to a 4 or even a 3.5, and you're going to notice you're not going to be getting short bites really anymore. You're going to be catching the fish a lot better. You're going to get better hookups. And along with that, a Muni jig paired with that works so well. We actually did some underwater footage of it while you're jigging and letting it sit there. And the buoyancy of a Z-Man bait, of all their baits, a LazTech, with that Muni jig, as soon as it lands, it's going to just creep all the way up and stand straight up on the bottom like a Ned rig. So whenever you get a bite right on the bottom, almost every single fish is going to be hooked perfectly in the roof of the mouth. And that's something that I like pride myself on, is that I don't lose like any fish while I'm fishing. Like, I would say my landing ratio is probably like, oh man, like 95%. Like, it's ridiculous with that bait, that setup. And, you know, all I'm doing is running a 10-pound leader, 15-pound Suffolk braid, advanced braid. So I'm using light gear, and I have no fears of losing a 10-pound walleye. Like, none at all. Even at this last event, we're fishing for 26 to 28 inches, and I'm just using light gear. And, you know, a Muni jig is a thin wire hook. A lot of people are scared by that because you could take that hook and bend it out if you really want to. But that's what I like. I like being able to drive them hooks into them in the roof of their mouth, and you don't lose them. That bait paired up with that jig, them fish can just suck it in so easily, and you don't have to worry about losing them. It's just a really good combo. And, you know, if they were really not going on that, which they kind of did get really finicky, which I only had to throw a jig and a nightcrawler at a few fish on tournament day. That was my backup bait, was just going to a jig and a crawler. And I only ended up throwing it at a few different fish. And then I went right back to the jerk shads, because you can just get such a fast reaction bite out of fish, but at the same time finesse them. So really, that's kind of the only two baits I used for that event. I mean, during the pre-fish, we tried so many different baits, like casting shad wraps, casting shadow wraps, pitching jigging wraps, jigging wrap magnums, ripping wraps, like everything. We tried it all, and we just ended up going back to the same combo.
And how are you fishing it? Like, how are you triggering these fish? I know it's on forward sonar. You're talking about pitching at fish that you see. So you must not have been, either you were, if the fish were in the weeds, you were seeing them, obviously, but you weren't blind casting whatsoever. You're pitching at fish. So, like, you know, you can be versatile with that bait, but, you know, given the bite, you know, the way it was, were those fish set up off the bottom? Did you have to cast right on their head? Were you bringing it past them? Like, you know, how were they reacting? I'm just kind of curious about how the bite really was and what you were kind of doing to be effective and efficient.
So during the pre-fish, the fish were very aggressive. I mean, you got it within like 10 feet of them, and they were just dive bombing. I mean, they were coming in hot. And really for that, you just had to get it close to them. And a lot of the times what you want to see is getting them on the very first fall. If you can drop it past them and they just dive bomb right down to the bottom and grab it, that's what you want. Tournament day, it kind of got a little bit more tough, and I don't know exactly why, but it was one of them days where you just had to hit them right on the head. And if I was 3 feet off, I was reeling in as fast as I could and pitching it right back out. And I still did get bites on that first initial drop, but a lot of the times I had to drop it right down to the bottom and start working it away from them. I mean, just a pop, drop, pop drop and kind of more of a pop pendulum and drop, and just kind of had to really finesse him into it. And I tell everyone usually asks, like, what cadence am I using? And I'm like, man, I don't even really know. I play every single fish to what that fish wants. One fish might be super aggressive, and then the next fish might just say, yeah, I'm not really interested in that. And you got to really work that fish. And when you just caught a fish that was 15 feet away from that fish that just dove right over and grabbed it. So any advice I could give on it is fish every fish like it's a new fish, basically. I mean, mm-hmm. It's sometimes the bite just goes across the board where every fish is just hot and going after it, but anymore it seems like I'm just finding that every fish is a little bit different, and I'm really going after the cadence that that fish wants.
Dude, I think that's phenomenal advice. But one thing I'm curious about is, like, when a fish isn't aggressive, like, does that automatically mean that you have to make that super accurate cast and it turns finessey right away where you're just trying to wiggle and entice? Or when is it appropriate to try to get them to react where you got to maybe rip it by them? You got to get them angry. Like, what does that mean to you? Like, what's your progression of cadence when it's a fish that you want? Like, what's the best cast and what's the best way to get that fish that's not super into it on that initial fall for you?
So the first thing I'm going to look for, if they're not like super into it, but they are like looking at it, I mean, you really have to figure it out on like the first jig, basically. Mm-hmm. The first, I'd say even maybe the first three, because you get about three chances before you're too far away from that fish or before that fish is just going to give up. And when I start pulling away from them, if they like that, you just kind of really have to watch what the fish wants. If your first initial pop is just a nice pop and drop, that fish starts going after it, I'm going to continue to do that. If you do that and they don't do anything and they just sit there, then a lot of the times I might even reel it away from that fish and make another cast, or I just go to something more finesse where it's just, you start wiggling it almost where you're almost doing like a bass style, like Ned rig, trying to get that fish to come over and just check it out and look at it. And it's weird because just every fish is like so different. I've learned to where you got to figure it out on the first few jigs, and that can be very tough to do when you're talking wind and waves and everything else that could possibly be happening on the boat.
And the other thing too is like how close do you get to fish, right? And that's different for every body of water, water clarity or fishing pressure or whatever. On Sakakawea, what was your comfort zone? Like, what was the ideal scenario with some of your, catches on some of your better fish, including pre-fish, like the whole picture here? Like, what was the ideal scenario for you for casting distance, and then how close could you bring them to the boat and still feel like you had a shot before they blew out, or did they not at all? I'm just curious on that.
Yeah, for Sakakawea, I found it didn't even matter how close or far you were from them. So basically, I like to keep them in my comfort zone and get them maybe around 30 feet. That's kind of like just somewhere where it's easy to pitch to them, easy to kind of see them and read them, everything else. You have enough time to jig to the boat if you had to. But really, I mean, it came down to more comfort for that one. Even on tournament day, I seen one, I like kind of swung over. I'm like, man, how did that fish just get right under me? And I just dropped down, and we were only in 5 foot of water. I dropped straight down and thump, and it was like one of the 5/8 that I caught directly under the boat in 5 foot of water. I set the hooks. I'm like, I need the net now.
Yeah.
But you go somewhere like Green Bay, and for that event, I couldn't even get a fish to look at it unless I bomb casted out to 80, 90 feet. And as soon as them fish got to 60 feet, it was over. So every body of water is a little bit different. Water clarity has a huge role in that. And sometimes fish, even in dirty water, will be afraid of the boat. I don't know if it's the sonar. It's just every lake is a little bit different.
So, yeah, you got a second place on Sakakawea. It was the final regular season event. And now you're sitting in second place, only by a few handful of points. So you're right there for Angler of the Year. And as you mentioned, going to that's on Huron, correct?
Yes. Yep. Yeah.
So directionally, that's closer to you than Lake Sakakawea is, but that's not your home body of water either. So excited to see how that goes, man. I'll definitely be rooting for you, and excited to see how that goes, man. But man, I appreciate it. We're doing really, really good on time here. I appreciate all the things that you've shared. We can wrap this thing up, man. I appreciate it. And anything you want to put out there content wise or promote yourself, your socials, if anybody has any questions or wants to follow along on your stuff, man, throw it out there.
Yeah, absolutely. Dylan Nussbaum Fishing across everything, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. But really, I can't thank you enough for having me on. And any advice I could give to anyone out there, especially tournament anglers, not even really just tournament anglers, just anyone going out on the water, is never stop learning. Every day you can learn something, and honestly, get a notebook and write it down. If it was just, hey, the fish were here on this 20-foot hump yesterday, today they're not, then look back and figure out why you might think they moved. If you just take notes like that every time you go out, you're going to be amazed with how fast you can learn from just them notes alone. I mean, you can learn a lot very quick. And on the tournament side, it does take years to learn some of that stuff, but if you do it at every event, it adds up quick. So never stop learning. It's definitely the biggest thing I can say, though. But I really appreciate you having me on here. I love doing podcasts with you. So
yeah, dude,
just excited for the championship now.
Yeah, dude, I'm really excited about it, man. And it's a smoking hot list there for that Angler of the Year race.